just want to take this opportunity to thank everyone, not just for tonight, but for coming and participating in the shiur and for the whole tekufa. It was really, I always said about this shiur, it's the highlight of my week. All right, Mishtabeach Le Rav Chisda, we're on Chav Tesam at Beis, 9 lines up from the bottom. Mishtabeach Le Rav Chisda Le Rav Huna B'Rav Hamnuna. That's a mouthful. There are 3 different Amoraim here in this sentence, so let's get the sentence structure. Rav Chisda was praising in front of Rav Huna, Rav Hamnuna. So get the picture. Rav Huna is the Rebbe. He's the Gadol Hador. Rav Chisda is his Talmud. And Rav Chisda is telling Rav Huna about an outstanding scholar by the name of Rav Hamnuna. The Adam Gadol Hu. He's what we call a Gavar Rabbi. He's a great guy. Amar Leis, Rav Huna says to Rav Chisda, Kishe Yavo Liyadcha, Hevi Ehu Liyadi. When he comes around, you know, I want to meet this fellow. He's great. It's a unique opportunity and a privilege for me to meet such a Talmud Chacham. Kiyasa, and when Rav Hamnuna showed up, Chazye, Rav Huna realized Delo Paris Sudra, which literally means that Rav Hamnuna was not wearing a turban on his hat. What's the significance of the fact that he didn't have his head covered with a turban? I don't know if you've ever seen the pictures of the old Sephardic Chachamim, you know, that they have the turbans on, you know, you see in the Rambam's picture. So this Rav Hamnuna was not wearing a turban. Now, to you and I, that wouldn't seem like a big deal, but apparently in the customs of those times, in that place, in that time, it was very shocking to Rav Huna that this Gavar Rabbi, this great guy, Rav Hamnuna, is not covering his head. Again, I don't know if he was bad, but at least he wasn't wearing the garb of a married person. It seems like once a person was married, he would wear this turban. Amar Leis, Rav Huna turns to Rav Hamnuna. He thought maybe the wind blew his hat off or something. He says, "My taima, lo prisas sudra. Why aren't you covering your head with this turban?" Amar Leis, Rav Hamnuna was honest with him. "Delo nesivna. I never got married. So adrina." Rav Huna turned his back to him, as if to say, "I don't want to look at you." Omar Le Chazi, notice, he says to him, this Rav Huna talked to Rav Hamnuna, "Be very careful. Delo chazis lu liapi, don't show up in front of my face ad dinosvas, until you get married." In other words, that's your homework. You know, it's not an easy homework. You know, but go find yourself a wife. And the Gemara says, Rav Huna litame. Rav Huna was following in his opinion that he had stated earlier. The Omer, because he said, "Ben esrim shana v'lo nasa isha." Once you hit the age of 20 years and you're not married, kol yomav ba'avera. All his days he's in violation of an avera. It's as if he had illicit relationships. It's an avera. So the Gemara says, "Ba'avera sal kedaitach." Can we take this literally? How could it be that someone who didn't get married is in what avera is he violating? Ela ema, but rather we have to rewrite the text of Rav Huna, kol yomav behir avera. All his days he's violating the iser of lo sasur achrei levavchan. The Gemara says to have hirhuri avera is a violation. Omar Rava. Rava wanted to support the opinion of Huna that you have up until the age of 20 to get married. That's all the rope they're going to give you, all the leeway they'll allow you. V'chein tana devei Rabbi Yishmael, and so too we find in a brayse of Rabbi Yishmael ad esrim shana yoshev hakadosh. You remember this Gemara? Until the age of 20, yoshev hakadosh baruch hu mitzapel yodam masa yisa isha. God waits in anticipation. When will he get married? Up until the age of 20. If he reaches the age of 20, he didn't get married. Omer, HaKadosh Baruch Hu declares, Tipach Atzmosav. Let his bones burn within him. This is a punishment for not taking a wife. A wife is called Etzem Me'atzomai. Ono Arishon says that a wife is a bone of my body. You know, she's a rib. She's a part of myself. So if he didn't take advantage of this mitzvah and implement it, then he deserves to be punished. Okay, then, and now we have a statement of Rav Chisda, which I find very shocking. Om Rav Chisda, Haida Difna Michavrei,
Why am I superior, says Rav Chisda, to my friend? What's my secret of my success in Ruchaniyut, in spirituality? The Nesivna Bishitzar. I got married at the age of 16. That's a pretty young age for a young man to get married. And not only that, listen to what he adds to Bud. He says, V'iyavi Nesivna Barbesar. Had I got married at the ripe old age of 14, and now we're turning to Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, Hava Amino L'Satan, I could have looked at the Yitzhar in his eyes, and I would have said to him, Gira Beinecha, I'm sending arrows into your eyes. In other words, I have total sovereign power to subjugate you. I would not be in any way taken over by the Yitzhar to have any wrong, you know, impure thoughts in my head. I was thinking, it's a little bit of a chiddush of myself, well, what's the phrase, gira beinecha, that I would send arrows? I thought that perhaps the weapon, you know, there are different weapons that you could use, you know, to if you're in combat with somebody. The advantage and the unique aspect of an arrow is that you shoot it from a distance, if you're a good archer, if you're skilled. So I think what the Gemara might be hinting here is that when it comes to the Yetzer Hara, don't engage him in combat, hand-to-hand combat. Don't come too close to the Yetzer Hara. You know, some people, when they see a hole in the ground, you know, they come all the way up to, you know, to look inside. They're very curious. But what happens is, if you come too close to the edge of the thing, then a little wind can blow you over. And that's what the Gemara says. Ein odom chotel mkein nichnas bo ruach shtus. That ruach shtus will just push you over. So the idea is, as the Gemara says about a nazir, I'm reading the nazir, schar, schar. If there's a vineyard, he should go all the way around the vineyard. Don't tempt yourself by going through the vineyard. We say every day in davening, al tavienu, lidei nisayon. You shouldn't bring yourself into a situation where you're exposed to. So the arrow means that I'm going to get married at such a young age that the Yetzer is never even going to get close to me. I'm going to shoot him from a distance. Amalei Ravel Rav Nosson Barami. Rav Nosson, Rava says to Rav Nosson Barami. And here he's addressing the question, at what age, when's the really best age for a father to have an impact on his son? That his son is on the one hand mature, so he doesn't rebel, but on the other hand he's not too old, so that he's independent on his own. And he looks at his father and he says, Dad, you're an old man. You know? So what is that? What is the most, the window of time which is most conducive to the influence and then the guidance a father can have on his son, and especially in the area of marriage, to encourage his son to find a wife? Amalei Ravler of Nasan, he says, Adiyodach al tzavare devrech, as long as your arm is on the shoulders of your son. In other words, you still have a certain impact on him. You can influence him. You know, he doesn't move without you because you have your arm on his shoulder, on his neck. Mishitzar, from the age of 16, the ad Esrim Vitarti, from the age of 16 till 22, those 6 years, that's when a son looks up to his father and his father can have an impact on him. You know, that's what they say, that Mark Twain, the famous American writer, used to say the phrase that when I was 14 years old, I thought my father knew nothing. I thought he was a total idiot. And then about 2-3 years later, I said, Dad, how'd you become so smart in the last 2-3 years? You know, finally you become mature enough to appreciate your dad, you know. I think most of us could probably relate to this, and I don't know, at least I can. I know, you know, certain areas, and especially, you know, you think your father's from a different generation, but then slowly but surely you come to appreciate, as you mature, the wisdom of your father. So according to Rava's ruling, that's the time in which you want to impact on your son. The Amri Lebet is another opinion. Mitamne Srei, from 18 ad Esrim V'arba, the critical period of time when you could influence your son, and again, especially in the area of getting married, is from the age of 18 until 24.
So it's still 6 years.
It's still 6 years, but we just shifted up or down, whichever way you want to say it. Kitanoi. And the Gemara says this issue about when is the time after which, you know, the son is on his own, and if he doesn't get married before that, it's going to be difficult. Kitanoi is really the subject of a machlokas tanoim, a much earlier machlokas. And the Gemara records on the pasuk, a machlokas regarding the pasuk in Mishlei, Chanoch lenar al pi darko. This is, of course, one of the most famous psukim in all Tanakh. Teach a young person according to his way. And then the end of the pasuk says, "Gam ki," you'll see it on the side, "Gam ki azkin lo yosur imenu." But try to continue influencing him even when he's older. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemya. There's a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya. Two tanoim. When is this nar fit? When is he susceptible? When is he open to the influence of chinuch, of guiding him in the way he should go? Chad Omar, according to one opinion, mishitzar. V'ad esrim v'tartein, v'chad omar mitimnei srei, v'ad esrim v'arbo. One opinion has 16 to 22, and the other has it from 18 to 24.
Meaning you shouldn't try to teach a child under either 16 or 18?
Well, not for marriage purposes. This whole sugi, I think, is addressing the issue of when the father can play his role. Because again, if you remember, let's turn back for a moment without losing our place to Daf Chav Tes Amud Aleph. And the Gemara says there, amongst the list of obligations that are incumbent on a father vis-a-vis his son, Tana Rabbanan, it's like pretty much in the middle of the page, Chayav Ha'av Chayav Bibno, La Mulo, Lifdoso, Lamdo Torah, and then Lasio Isha. So a father is obligated to make sure that his son gets married. Now we have to keep this in mind. It's easy in our society, we forget the responsibility of a father vis-a-vis his son in this area. And that responsibility, according to the Gemara, becomes that influence that a father could have on his son. Again, he can't force his son to get married. You know, there's no marriage against the person's will. We've discussed this in the past. But the age in which the son, the age that's conducive for the father to have an impact on the son, are these ages. It's interesting that the Mefarshim speak about why the age for marriage is 20 or 22, 24, these years come up. And
but it's 18. It doesn't say 18.
Well, no, I mean to say, when's the latest? You know, you're right. The Mishnah says, I'm glad, Jeff, you point this out to me. The Mishnah says, Ben Shmona Esrei L'chupa, which means that a person should get married. Let me put it to you this way, that the obligation to look for a marriage partner begins at the age of 18. Which, according to the Rambam, by the way, means when he's into his 18th year. He's already celebrated his 17th birthday. But we ask the question, okay, the obligation is kicked off, it begins at the age of 18. But by what age, you know, you're learning Torah, we spoke about this at great length, that Lilmo Torah Lisa Isha, Yilmo Torah Tchila, except for rare occasions, rare exceptions to the rule, Torah takes precedence. And therefore the Rambam says, Mutalolis Acher, you could postpone marriage for the sake of Talmud Torah, but up until what age? When's the cutoff? You know, when does it hit the fan and the bell rings and say, come on, you can't just endlessly postpone this mitzvah. So we have in the poskim three different approaches. Three primary approaches. One is 18, I'm sorry, scratch that. One is 20, by the age of 20, the other is 22, and the other is 24. The Chofetz Chaim, if you recall, we mentioned, pushed it to 25. So all the Mefarshim seem to revolve around the following issue. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Ben Chamesh L'Mikra, when the child reaches the age of 5, his father should be teaching him Mikra. Ben Eser L'Mishnah, and Ben Chamesh say L'Talmud. Now if you notice, when we divide up the child's learning life, so we separate each period of time, whether it's Mikra, Mishnah, Talmud, by 5 years. So according to one opinion, we're going to push off marriage until you finish your curriculum of Talmud. Now, if the Mishnah says Talmud begins at the age of 15, by when do we expect him to get the diploma? I have smicha in Talmud, so to speak.
By 20.
So therefore, by the age of 20, you should be married. Again, what it probably means is, not that when the you know, when you hit the 20th birthday, you're married. But somehow I don't know exactly how this works logistically, but somehow by the age of 20, you should be married.
Come out of the freezer.
Come out of the freezer. Now, what generates the other opinions? So I can explain the opinion of 22. The Gemara says in Ksubas that once a woman is ready for marriage, we give her a year's preparation. In terms of what she does during that year, it's not crystal clear in my mind, but there's a year's preparation. She may be fancying herself up, she may be getting her dresses ready and her cosmetics, she may be maturing in that year on a psychological level, whatever it is, we give her a year, 12 months. So now...
Are you talking about a period of time between Kedushin and Nisuin? That year? Or are we talking about something else?
Well, I assume that, let's say that Kedushin and Nisuin took place at the same time, like we have it today, mm-hmm. Though we would say they had the engagement, they agreed to get married, give her a year to get prepared. So the poskim flip it on the other side, that even a young man should have a year to prepare. Now, if we assume that he finished his course of study in Talmud 5 years later, after he started it at 15, then into the 21st year, he should be already preparing for marriage, because he's finished his course of study in Talmud. And then by the age of 22, which means he's past 21, so we call 22, he should get married. There's another opinion that says 24. Where did they come up with the number 24? So according to this opinion, and I found this quoted in the name of the later Achronim, that at the beginning of his 22nd year, he finishes his study of Gemara.
Took 7 years.
Right, let's see, why would he finish his Gemara study at the age of 22? So at the age of 15, apparently he should be ready for his study of Talmud, correct? And that begins mitchilas sheshesrei. It's the beginning of his 16th year. In other words, as we said before in the Rambam, that when it says that he should get married at 18, it means into his 18th year. So when we say that he finished his Talmud at the age of 20, it means, I'm sorry, when he finished his Mishnah study at the age of 15, it means the beginning of his 16th year. Vishnas Hil Hashmonasre, the 18th year, Eino Ol Leminyan HaChamesh Shonim. And then we subtract 1 year, because during that year, he's beginning to get prepared. Im kein yotze shebitchilas shnas ha'esrim v'shnayim, the beginning of his 22nd year, who mesayim es leaving a gemara, and therefore the latest time should be 22. U'mash omer atana sheni zman nesun ad gil esrim v'arba l'fi mash omer b'ksubis b'ushes kinu she'odom alamed es b'no b'nachas v'ena rodubo she'yilmad ad she'hei ben shneimasar. The Gemara says that we don't force a young man to study until he is 12. What does this mean? From the age of 5 until the age of 10, he's studying Mikra. At the age of 10, he should be beginning his course of study in Mishnah. But we're going to allow him, we'll give him a little bit of rope until he's 12. Let me just see if I can clarify this a little further. So Tosu says that when it says in Avos ben Eser leMishnah, it means that that's when you begin to break him into the study of Mishnah, but it's not compulsory until he reaches the age of what?
12.
So from 10 to 12, we'll give him a little time, I guess, to mature. And we won't force him to study Mishnah. So if you start the count of Mishnah at the age of 12, then he should finish his study of Mishnah
17.
At the age of 17. Correct? U'mesayim limud ha-Mishnah rak begil 17. V'oz, at that age of 17, he begins to study Talmud. Now, when we get to the 18th year, we don't count that in the minyan. As we said before, we give him 1 year to prepare. In Cain, Misayim es Limud, es Limudo, he finishes Talmud at the age, Bishnas Esrim V'arba, and then he should get married. Okay, basically, the point I just wanted to convey to you is that the later Achronim work very hard to calculate how much time he needs, A, to study Talmud, and B, to prepare himself for marriage, and that's how they generate all these different possibilities. The next piece of Gemara we learned already last Sunday. We'll go through it quickly again. Ad heichan chayav adam lelamedes b'no Torah. Which presumably means how much Torah is the father obligated to teach his son? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel Kigon. We should follow the model of Zvulun ben Don. Zvulun ben Don, Rashi says, was a Talmud at that time. He's a well-known student. Shalimdo Avi Aviv, his grandfather taught him Mikra, Mishnah, Talmud, Halachas Vagodos, the entire gamut of Torah as we know it. Five different sections. Mikra, Mishnah, Talmud, Halachas Vagodos. Probably in that order. Meisve, how could Shmuel tell me that a father has to teach his son the entire gamut of Torah? The Braisa says, Limdo Mikra, Ein Malamdo Mishnah. Rashi explains, once the father has taught his son Mikra, he's not obligated to teach his son Mishnah. The Amar Rava, and Rava adds, what's Mikra? Zu Torah. Rashi says Zu Torah means the five books of Moses, but not Nevi'im and Ksuvim. It means that the father, according to this Braisa, the father exhausts his obligation to teach his son Torah as soon as his son has studied what? The five books of Moses. And Shmuel said that the father is obligated to teach his son Mikra, Mishnah, Talmud, Halachas Vagodas. How do we reconcile Shmuel with this Braisa? So the Gemara answers, no, you misunderstood Shmuel's statement. When Shmuel said that Zvulun ben Dan is going to be the paradigm from which we derive the halacha of Talmud Torah of the father, no! There are two different dimensions of Zvulun ben Dan. Two things we have to learn here. Number one, what's the scope and the extent of the father's obligation? How much Torah does he have to teach his son? Number two, is there an obligation incumbent upon a grandfather to teach his grandson Torah? As Rashi says, now the Gemara is going to reinterpret Ad Heichan Chayav Adam Lelamed Espino Torah means Ad Heichan means how many generations down the line? Kizvulun ben Dan. Who taught Zvulun ben Dan Torah? His grandfather. V'lo Kizvulun ben Dan. But we're not going to go as far as to establish the Chiyuv based on Zvulun ben Dan. What does that mean? Kizvulun ben Dan says the Gemara Shalimdo Avi Aviv. And just like Zvulun ben Dan was taught by his grandfather, we have to derive from that that a grandfather has to teach his son, his grandson Torah. But Velokis Vulun ben Dan, we're not going to base our definition of the scope of the father's obligation on Zvulun ben Dan. Dilu Hasam, there in the case of the grandfather teaching Zvulun ben Dan, Mikra, Mishnah, Talmud, Allah, Sagos, he taught him everything. Dilu Hacha, but here, with regard to the absolute obligation incumbent upon every father, he's not chayv to teach him at what? Nothing more than Mikra, Levad. So please note, I think we mentioned it last time, there's a machlokas here between Rashi and the Rambam. Rashi understood that when Rava says Mikra Zu Torah, what does Mikra Zu Torah mean? Everybody take a look at Rashi, so you have it in sight. Torah, says Rashi, V'lo Nevi'im Uksuvim. The Rambam says you have to teach your son all of Mikra. Kol Torah Shebichsav Kula. And the Mepharshim say, what does the extra word kula mean? Even Nevi'im Uksuvim.
So, all of Tanakh. Not just
all of Tanakh. What happens beyond Tanakh? Does the father have any obligation whatsoever beyond Tanakh? It would seem, at simple first glance from our sugya, that the answer is no. All the father has to teach, according to Rashi, Chamisha Chumshei Torah, according to the Rambam, Tanakh. But beyond Tanakh, you don't have to teach your son Torah. But this kicks up a lot of controversy. Not everyone bought into this. Who disagrees with this? So we have a long list of later poskim that assume the following. Listen carefully. There's a double obligation incumbent upon a father with regard to teaching his son Torah. One is what's called bechinam. Maybe I can write this on the thing. Bechinam. And the other is beschar. Can anybody tell me the difference between the two? David?
Free and perfect.
Free. Right. Free means that if the father has the time and he's capable, he has the knowledge, then he personally sits down with his son and teaches him Torah. Bischar means...
engage him alamed.
Correct. He engages him alamed. He pays tuition fees. Hopefully, if it's Canada, he'll get a tax deduction. But in the United States, you don't get any tax deduction because it's considered payment for services. But here, you get it. So, how far is the father's obligation to teach his son Torah? So some say, and I'll quote to you all the whole who's list, is that if you're talking about schar, then we walk away from our sugya on Daf Lamed with the following conclusion. The father has to pay tuition for his son until his son has mastered Tanakh. But if you're asking the question, if the father has the capability of teaching his son Bechinam, then the father's obligation is endless. It's infinite, encompasses all of the Torah. Now let me read to you some of the literature on this. This is because this is a fascinating issue. Does the father, the Lechem Mishnah, you heard of the Lechem Mishnah, and the Bir Agra, the Vilna Gaon, say that Bechinam, Chayav Lelamdo, Mishnah, and whatever else he can teach his son. Vatam she'eno melamdo Mishnah b'schar. So why is it if you have to teach your son Bechinam, even beyond Mikra, why don't you teach your son b'schar, meaning pay tuition? What's the difference between Bechinam and b'schar? And he says an unbelievable answer. Mishum she'asur litol schar al limud Mishnah. It means that the melamed is not allowed to be paid for teaching Mishnah. Did you ever hear that? Imagine what this means to all the Klei Kodesh, all the Mechanchim, all the Rabbanim, all the Rosh Hashiva who teach Torah. They're not allowed to be paid unless they're teaching Mikra. So the Gemara Nidarim, the Gemara says, why is it that a Rebbe is allowed to take money for teaching Tanakh, but not for being paid for Mishnah, which is Torah Shebal Peh? And the Gemara says, for one of two reasons. Either he's teaching small children, and he's being paid as a babysitter. That's my language, not the Gemara's. Meaning the Gemara says he pays him Shmira for supervising the children. They shouldn't go out in the streets and get Chashon killed by a car. And that's what you're paying for. You're not paying for Torah. Or, says the Gemara in its second answer, you pay the Rebbe for what's called Pisuke Tamim. What do we call it in our language? Pisuke Tamim? Trop. Because here in Toronto, everybody's son, when he's bar mitzvah, lanes, you know, which, by the way, I have questions about that. So there's something called Pisuke Tamim. That's not considered Torah per se. And therefore, you're allowed to be paid for it. Why isn't it Torah per se? I mean, after all, it is very important to know how to split up a pasuk into its various component parts. Sometimes that really reveals something about the pshat. You'll see Rashi does very often. But I would call it Hechsher Talmud Torah. It's the peripheral Talmud Torah that's necessary, but it's not Talmud Torah per se. Give you an example of what I have in mind by Hechsher Talmud Torah. Let's say you are studying Sukkah Daf Ches. It's a sugya called Sukkah Agula. And you want to know what are the parameters of a Sukkah Agula? You have to know something called pi. So you take a course in math, and then you can be ready to learn the sugyan sukkah. Or, for example, there's a sugyan chulin, for those who are learning the Daf Yomi these days, about the biology of a bird. You know, to know whether it's a trefoil, it's not a trefoil. So you got to open up a biology text. Certain sugyas in Sanhedrin, you probably have to know social sciences. And sugyas in Kiddush HaChodesh, you must study astronomy. You know, otherwise you don't know what's going on. So if I ask you the following question, and pardon my phraseology here, but would you be allowed to take an astronomy textbook into the washroom and study astronomy for the sake of understanding Kiddush HaChodesh while you're in the washroom? What would you say about that? Torah, you're not allowed to study in a washroom. Chas v'shalom.
No, but you would be.
I would say you would be. Why? It's not what you'd call gufa shel Torah. It's not a hefta shel Torah. It's a hechsher Talmud Torah. Not making light of it, but it's not. It's peripheral. It's an agenda. It's adjacent to Talmud Torah. It's connected to. Pisukei Tamim is sort of like an adjunct to Torah, but it's not the essence of Torah itself. So you're allowed to be paid for it. Once you get to Mishnah, which is Torah Sheval Peh, the child is old enough, right? He's supposedly by now 10 years old, right? So he should be old enough to watch himself. He's not a little baby. So it's very hard, you know, it's a little bit hard pressed to say that at that age, and certainly not at the age of 15, that the Rebbe is being paid as a Shomer Tinokos for babysitting. Pisukei Tamim, supposedly the child has already mastered because he's on his way to Mishnah. So therefore the Rebbe can't take Talmud. The Poskim, by the way, they go ballistic. What do you mean? How's he going to support himself and teach Mishnah? Forget about Talmud and so forth. I remember my Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, he used to say to us, don't take an example from me, meaning I take a salary, but don't take an example from me. But the Poskim to work overtime, bend their backs to try to come up with some acrobatics that allow a Rebbe to get paid for Torah, so they say he's getting paid schar batol. Have you ever heard that word? I remember when I was a Rebbe in Shalaviv. You heard of Shalaviv? Anybody?
Of course. Yeah.
So I came to my Rosh Hashiva and I said, Rosh Hashiva, I have a master's. I can get a good job. I should be paid more than my colleague who graduated part of his yeshiva. It didn't fly. I tried, but in fact, my colleague from Potovich got a better salary than I did, so my masters didn't help me.
That's Schar Batola.
But Schar Batola means, what am I worth on the market? You know, I could be a doctor, a lawyer, a physician, a businessman, I could be investing in stocks and bonds, you know, look what I could be making. You know, billable hours, you know, I could have been a partner in a law firm, you know, what do you mean? So you pay me a pittance, you know, pay me what reflects Schar Batola, the fact that I can't go out there and work because I'm dedicating myself to teaching Torah. But that means we circumvent. It's called Aharama. In other words, we're not paying you for the teaching of Torah. We're paying you to compensate you for what losses you incurred by not teaching, you know, philosophy in graduate school or whatever it might be. So here I want to tell you something from the Sefer HaMachna. Many times I've mentioned to you the Sefer HaMachna on Kiddushin. He has a fascinating insight. First, let me suggest his question to you, because the question itself will teach us a derech, you know, a methodology, how to learn a piece of Gemara. The Gemara asked the kash on Shmuel, you remember? Shmuel said, according to the Gemara's Havamina, that a father is responsible for teaching his son the whole gamut. Five different categories of Torah. The Gemara asked the kash, and may say from a Braisa, the Braisa says, Limdo. Mikra, Enom Alamdo, Mishnah. Then the Gemara gives an answer. But before the Gemara gives an answer, there's another line in the Gemara. Did you notice it? Amar Rava, Mikra, Zu Torah. If you would erase those five words, Amar Rava, Mikra, Zu Torah, you would have a perfect flow from the Kash of the Gemara to the Teretz of the Gemara. It seems that the Gemara wedged in the middle here something that's totally extraneous.
Okay.
That itself gives you a derech halim. You know, to read the Gemara carefully and meticulously and see what lines in the Gemara, what statement in the Gemara is completely out of the progression. In other words, it doesn't seem to be, as I said before, wedged in. Oh. So the Sefer HaMachna says the following. He asks the following question. Why does the Gemara posit a contradiction between Shmuel and the Braisa? Says the Sefer HaMachna, I don't see a contradiction between Shmuel and the Braisa. Shmuel is discussing one thing, the Braisa is addressing another thing. Shmuel is talking about the obligation of a father to teach his son Bechinam. The Braisa is talking about the obligation of a father to teach the son Bischar. As we said before, in the name of the Gaon, the Vilna Gaon, and the Lecha Mishnah who came before the Gaon, the chiyuv of the father to pay Bischar could only go as far as, but not beyond, the heter that permits a Rebbe to take a salary. And since Mishnah is something that the Rebbe's not allowed to be paid for, therefore the father doesn't have to support his son and pay checks for tuition when he gets the Mishnah. That's the subject of the Raisa. Limdo Mikra Eino Malando Mishnah means he's not chayv to pay tuition for Mishnah. Shmuel says he's got to teach him Mikra, he's got to teach his son Mikra and Mishnah and Talmud and Halachas and Agados. That's referring to Bechinam. Because as the Gaon and the Lech Mishnah say, Bechinam, the father, if he's capable, he has the time and the ability and the knowledge, he has to teach his son everything, the whole kit and caboodle. From A till
Z.
Hey, what's going on here? I was hoping you would say Z, you know, for my last year here in Toronto. Okay, so that's the kash. Says the Sefer HaMachne. That's why the Gemara introduced Rava. Rava Mikrazu Torah in order to block this answer. This answer is not gonna do it for you. Why? Because since Rava interpreting the Braisa again says, Limdo Mikra Eno Malando Mishnah, and you wanted to tell me maybe the Braisa, the subject of the Braisa is Schar. It can't be. Why? Because Rava says that when the Braisa says you're obligated as a father to teach your son Torah, it's referring to the five books of Moses, or according to the Rambam, all of Tanakh. But Rava doesn't whisper a word about Pisukei Tamim. If Rava was of the opinion that the subject of this Braisa was Schar, how far is the financial obligation of a father vis-a-vis his son to lay out money for his son's Torah education? The answer to that question would be Pisukei Tamim. Because as we said before, you're not allowed to take money for any teaching of Torah just when the children are young and they're learning Mikra. Then you take money not for the teaching of what? Of Mikra, but rather teaching of Pisukei Tamim. Apparently, Rav understood this Braisa as referring to the father's obligation Bechinam, and therefore he said there's no obligation on the father beyond Torah, which means Tanakh according to the Rambam. But Shmuel said he's got to teach him everything. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. So what we gain from this Sefer HaMachna is two things. Let's just go over them, because I enjoy the, you know, so geschmack, the taste of the Sefer HaMachna in my mouth. The Sefer HaMachna teaches me two things. He says, number one, we could have easily have reconciled Shmuel's statement with the Braisa by saying that Shmuel's talking about Bechinam, the Braisa's talking about Beschar. Since the Braisa's talking about Beschar, the limitation is up to, but not including Mishnah, because Mishnah you're not allowed to get paid for. The second question, why did the Gemara wedge in Rava? To show you that the subject of this Braisa is Limud Bechinam. It's not the subject of Schar. If the subject of this Braisa was Beschar, then what would the father be allowed and obligated to pay for? Not Torah, but rather what? Pisukei Tamim. Since Rava doesn't whisper a word about Pisukei Tamim, but he says that the father is obligated to teach his son Torah, which means, according to the Rambam, all of Tanakh, it must be that the subject of this Braisa is the chiyuv of the father b'chinam, not the chiyuv of the father b'schar.
Relatively new derech of learning with Pesukei Tamim, and maybe that's one of the reasons they do it.
Yeah, you should know that Pesukei Tamim might be not just the trup on any particular pasuk. It could be, I'm going to tell you something revolutionary, and I'll tell you why I say this, that Pesukei Tamim might be learning a methodology of how to give me a pasuk, and I'll tell you what the pisukim should be, what the trop should be. Because my good friend Yitzhak Shurin, Rabbi Shurin, who's a grandson of Rabbi Yaakov, Kamenetsky, he once told me, I should go back and clarify this, that his grandfather said that he, after many years of research, has the keys to trop. He understands in any pasuk what the trop will be. Without giving you,
they got a set of rules to create the trap.
Correct. Rules that govern where the trap should be. There may be exceptions, but those exceptions are far, are few and far between, and that's when Chazal, you know, will dash in, you know, but there is a methodology. You know, when I heard this, I was in shock, because I always understood that there are so many different possibilities.
It's just a Masorah.
And it's a Masorah. And that's why I always thought that who's a good Baal Kore if you have a good memory and you remember the trump. But we're saying something totally different. You don't have to remember. It's not a matter of memorization. You just got to learn the system. The system.
Well, there's the Zilberman schools, right?
Yeah, they spend a lot of time on Tanakh. Because keep in mind that the fundamental chiyuv of the father to teach his son is Tanakh. The Mishnah in Avo says that the father is teaching his son Mikra, and after Mikra, when the son reaches the age of 10 years old, he's starting Mishnah. And the Maharal Prague took this Mishnah to all the way, you know, to the end of the line. He said that that's how we have to follow the pattern of the Mishnah and create curriculum in which a student... So imagine the first year of a young man's life when he opens up a Gemara is when he reached the age of 15. Yeah,
but they're doing that at 10 now.
Oh, they're doing it at 10,
okay. In my time...
In my time, I don't know. I think I was in fourth grade. They taught me Halev and
Zias.
I remember we were learning Yeh Shalom Midas. You remember that? Abai and Rava. I was in fourth grade. I was such a small guy. I could barely carry my briefcase. You know. And do you think for one moment that I understood what Yeh Shalom Midas was about? Do you think today I understand what Yeh Shalom Midas is about? I don't know. But at least today I have a little bit more of a grasp on what the Machlokas is about. But fourth grade now there's a little bit of a different style. They start with, a lot of yeshivas are starting with easy Masechtas, although I don't know that there is such a thing as an easy Masechta. I'm still looking for it. But they think that Megillah, maybe Tainus, you know, certain brachos, certain aspects of Moed and brachos are easier for. But in the original formulation of it, way back when, at the time of the Mishnah, you would push off the study of Gemara till you were 15 years old. But you had to do a thorough study of Tanakh.
Does anybody deal with the point in the example of Zvulun ben Dan?
Yeah.
That in fact, in that example, and everything that flows from it, we're not talking about the father teaching the son, but rather we're talking about the grandfather. And perhaps the obligation on the grandfather is not identical to the obligation of the father, because the primary obligation is really on the father.
Yeah, and the grandfather is a secondary obligation, so maybe has less of an obligation. But the only problem is, if as the Gemara understood in the Havamina, Shmuel was using Zvulun ben Dan's case, that model as the paradigm, as the Binyan Av, then we have a problem, because if a grandfather, the way Shmuel understood it in Zvulun ben Dan, is obligated to teach his grandson the entire gamut of Torah, then Kal v'chomer, a father would have to teach. Now, your question, Lawrence, I think becomes very pressing. L'maskana, after the Gemara, at the end of the day, is willing to extrapolate, to take one aspect of Zvulun ben Dan, but not the other. Meaning that Zvulun ben Dan will teach us the obligation l'doros, that a grandfather has to teach his grandson Torah, which is the next piece that we want to learn now. Is it so that the grandfather has the same identical chiyuv as the father himself? That's a fascinating question. Maybe the grandfather's chiyuv is a little bit like you say, secondary, it's not as extensive.
We were discussing several weeks before, to what extent is the obligation of the father to teach his son compared with the obligation of the father to teach himself if he didn't learn earlier? And we were discussing that.
Who comes first, right? Yeah. The father himself or the son? So let's take a look now at the next piece of Gemara. And the Gemara says the following. V'avi aviv mimachayev? Is this really true? The premise that a grandfather has to teach his grandson Torah? V'atanya, we have a brisa. V'limadetem osom es b'neichem? What is the extra word b'neichem doing here?
V'lo b'nei b'neichem.
Umani Makayim says the Braisa, but what about a pasuk that indicates that you do have to teach your grandson? Vodata levanecha vilivnei vanecha. So the first pasuk, v'limadetem osam es b'neichem. If I'm not mistaken, that pasuk is in Parshas Vaschanan. Could that be? If somebody has a chumash here, we could look it up. But the next pasuk, of Odata Levanecha, that's earlier in Dvarim. That should be in Parshas Dvarim, I think. If someone has a chumash, she can look it up. But what does the pasuk of Odata Levanecha vilivnei vanecha indicate? How far does the mitzvah Talmud Torah extend?
To a grandchild.
Even to a grandchild, correct? Lomar lecha, no, it's telling you should call him Lamed es b'no Torah. Malalov akosuv ki ilu limdo lo ulivno uliben bino ad sof kol ador.
So not that you're teaching your grandchildren, but you get the schar,
correct,
because you taught your son.
It's considered as if you taught your grandson and all the generations thereof. In other words, the unit of father son in terms of Talmud Torah really represents and is considered like the unit of transmitting Torah through all the generations. So it's a fascinating thing. You know, a lot of people... Oh, Akev? Vodato Varech is already Vaschanan?
Akev, the first one is Yud Aleph.
Yeah.
The Varm Yud Aleph is an Akev, and the Varm Dalet is a Vaschanan.
Okay, so I got them both wrong, sorry. At least I was consistent.
Well, just interesting.
You knew it was Dvarim, at least.
Yeah, I knew that Vodato Levanech is early. I didn't realize it's already Vaschanan. When does Vaschanan start, actually? What parish?
Just before Dalet.
Huh?
Just before Dalet.
Okay. So Parshas Dvarim only has three chapters to it. Is that it?
It actually starts in the Vaschanan is part of Gimel. And then about seven
sukkahs. You mean Vaschanan is still within the third chapter?
And then
all of Parshas Dvarim has 2.5 chapters to it. That's rare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
okay.
About 7-8 sukkahs in, Dalet comes in Vaschanan.
So in Parshas Vaschanan, it indicates that the grandfather is teaching his grandson. So the Gemara says, no, it's really the father is teaching his son, but the Torah is considering it. It's so important to teach your son Torah. That's why I always say people
don't want to break the chain because there's ramifications down the
road. And if you fulfill that chain and maintain the chain and pass on the Torah to your son, it's as if you passed it on. That's your responsibility as a father. A lot of people miss the boat on this. You know, it's a tremendous opportunity to teach your son Torah. But anyway, one thing is clear from the Braisa that there's no obligation on the shoulders of a grandfather to teach his grandson. That's why the pasuk says b'neichem v'lo b'nei b'neichem. Now we had a gemara earlier. If you happen to remember that the pasuk b'neichem taught us something else. Does anybody recall? You want to refresh your memory? Go back to v'lo b'noteichem. So it's very interesting. If you
use the word for this, you can't use the word for that.
Right. So therefore, the Ar Chadash, which is a famous sefer on Masechet Kiddushin, he wants to assume that according to this Braisa, a father has to teach his daughter Torah. Because you don't have the mute of B'nei Chem V'lo B'nei Seichem. So if you're ever looking for a source for an obligation on the father,
David and I can get some scarf.
Like if you want to say a good var at your daughter's bat mitzvah, you know, this would be a good var to say over that according to one brisa in the Gemara, the way that the Aruch Kodesh understood the brisa, a father has to teach his daughter Torah. So the Gemara answers, who the Omar Shmuel, who insists that a grandfather must teach his grandson Torah, ki haitana, he says, like a different brisa. So this issue is already an issue and a controversy dating back to the time of the Tanon. The Sanya in the second brisa says, imalitim osim es b'neichem, eli ela b'neichem. B'nei b'neichem minayin, how do I know you have to teach your grandson? Talmud lomar, vodato livanecha, vilivnei vanecha. And came out of Lomer Bneichem. Bneichem, as we've seen earlier, below Bnoseichem. Well, halacha we paskin that a grandfather has to teach his grandson Torah. Let's assume that you have two individuals to teach. One is not related to you at all. He's Ben Chavero. The other is your grandson. Who would come first? If you couldn't teach both of them, your grandson would come first. What about if it's your son and your grandson? Oh, so there the Rambam says you teach your son first. And why is that? Because the primary chiv, this is what Lawrence, who you were shooting at before, is to teach your son. There's also a chiv to teach your grandson, but that's not on the same level as teaching
son.
As teaching your
son. Presumably, if the father of the child taught his son, then that individual's father, the grandfather of the child, wouldn't have to.
Right. But what happens if the father doesn't teach the grandson? Then the grandfather would certainly have to teach him. The question is, does the grandfather have to pay money for the tuition of his son? In other words, we divvied up the chiv of the father to two parts, but chinam b'schar. Perhaps one could say that this extra chiv of b'schar applies in the case of a son, but not in the case of a grandson. Maybe the grandfather's chiv is only bechinam, but not bischar.
The example here, considering what was being taught, would suggest that it was all bechinam.
Why do you say it has to be bechinam?
What was he teaching?
Oh, I see what you're saying. If you maintain the shita that you can't take schar for teaching Torah Shebaal Peh,
yeah.
So there must be that he's teaching a bechino.
Yeah.
But would he have to pay b'schar? I don't know. I mean, the Bryce is not entering into that question. The Kesem Mishnah raises another question. Does a great-grandfather have to teach his great-grandson Torah? And what does the Gemara mean? Does the Gemara mean b'nei Bneichem? What does Gemara mean? Zareichem, meaning all the Doros down the line, as long as you can teach. But let's get back to an earlier question. What I wanted to know was, why is it that it's so important for the Torah to impose an obligation on the grandfather to teach his grandson Torah? And the Gemara really waxes very dramatic about this. Look at the next line in the Gemara, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, kol ha-melamed es ben beno Torah. If a grandfather teaches his grandson Torah, malal of akosav kilu kibla me'ar Sinai, it's as if he accepted the Torah at Har Sinai. Now, who's the he over here? You know, pronouns are very tricky. I don't. It's as if the grandfather received it at Har Sinai.
Really, the grandchild.
In the very next pasuk. No, actually, I think it's in the previous pasuk. We have the Chumash open. Yom Asher Amadet Lufnei Hashem Elokecha B'Chorev.
I mean, in this day and age, you can certainly make a case for that. I mean, a lot of the second generation, so the father's son is a little bit going off the derech. So if the father's not bringing him back, then the grandfather should have the onus of...
Right, but let me ask you this, Ralph. Who,
on a practical basis, a lot of these kids are just being...
Who's Ki'ilu Kibla Me'ar Sinai? So somebody, I don't know, it was you, David, who somebody mentioned that it would be the grandfather. I don't know. I'm tempted to... Jeff, you say it's a grandson? I'm also tempted to think of the grandson. Why would it be the grandson?
The tradition.
Well, I don't know.
What would be the grandson's...
The Har Sinai is Moshe Rabbeinu.
Correct, but what... What is it that we lack today? You know, here we are so many thousands of years after Kabbalah HaTorah.
Well, we're that much farther away.
We're that much farther away. So in the transmission of Torah, something of that original, you know, experience of Hashem, the Shekhinah coming down on the mountain to give us Torah and hearing the Torah and Moshe Rabbeinu, some of that is lost. You know, that's tremendous. How does it say there in Dayenu, right? Ilu kirvanu fe'ar Sinai. So imagine the power and the impact of Kabbalah HaTorah Har Sinai. We don't have that. But the earlier generations at least were closer to that.
Yeah, but it's Hamalamed as Ben Benai Ke'ilu. So you would think it goes back on the Hamalamed.
Okay, that's certainly a good argument. The Marsha writes.
Otherwise, you're jumping to the other subject, like, you know.
But in fact, if it were the students.
Yeah.
The value of the Torah that the student gets should be, you know, the benefit.
Right. So we don't know. Is it
doesn't require?
Is it the value?
A scar for receiving it.
Right.
As sort of like an extra. The
right.
Scar
so
would be on the teaching.
So who's actually experiences Ke'ilu Kibla Me'ar Sinai? So I'm just trying to find, I wanted to read this to you inside, the two opinions about this. But I'm not finding it. Give me just one more second. Maybe I'll give it. I saw it on Shabbos, so I didn't have a chance to underline it. Okay. Not finding it right now, but there are two opinions here about it.
They have it here.
Oh, you have something there? Read it to me.
Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi states that the teacher of the Torah to his grandchild is deemed to have accepted the Torah at Sinai. Alternatively...
Oh, so that means it was the grandfather, yeah.
That means it was grandfather. Alternatively, the statement may mean that when the grandson learns Torah from the grandfather, the grandson
is both
to have accepted at Sinai.
Does he tell you who said it?
Marsha.
Oh.
Yeah.
So I don't have the Marsha in front of me now, but I think what the Marsha might be saying in the second interpretation is that by going back one generation to your grandfather's generation, you're getting a little bit closer to Har Sinai. And I'll be honest with you, my father, may rest in peace, linked me back to an earlier generation because he already studied Torah at the time that Reb Shimon Shkop was teaching in yeshiva. And Reb Moshe Soloveitchik was teaching in yeshiva. That's a whole nother door. And my father's grandfather already was he communicated in Torah with Reb Chaim Ozer, who is the Dayan in Vilna. Now, if you read about the life of Reb Chaim Ozer, I mean, you're mamish in a whole different door. I mean, I'm not even talking about the door of pre-war Europe. You know, my father was already in Lithuania in the 30s, in the 20s. But you're going back. Well, I wouldn't say to the Vilna Gaon. You know, that's 250 years. But you're really going back to a whole different period of time. Reb Chaim Ozer. You know, I would pay millions of dollars to see the letters that my great grandfather had from Reb Chaim Ozer. But nobody has any record of them. But my father said that there were letters back and forth. Mm-hmm. My great-grandfather's name was Rav Yitzchok Sorkin. And he was the Malavin in Shtut. My father came from a town called Plisa. And he taught the boys before they shipped them off to the big leagues. The big leagues was in Lubavitch. It was called Tomchei Tmimin. So from the age of about 15... and up, you were in my great-grandfather's class. And then you got sent off to Tomchei Tmimim after a year or two. So my father was 12 years old, and my great-grandfather stooped him into the class, sitting with 15 and 16-year-olds. And when they asked him, why, how can you do that? He said, because he's an Ilui. He's a genius. So my father told us over to Vulcan. Vulcan, you heard of the Torah Tmima? So anyway, yeah. So, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. This Khan Aaron was the Rav in Pinsk. His son, Vulcan, was a famous Rav HaMachshir in America.
So this was in the
1920s?
Or early?
Yeah, 30s or so. So my father told Vulcan this story, so Vulcan decided to call my father the Pleaser Ilu. So that some people knew my father as the Pleaser Ilu. Let me just see if we can just quickly wrap this up, because I know the time has come. So the Gemara says the following, that Yom Asher Amadato Lifnei Hashem Elokecha B'choref, that this experience of a grandfather teaching Torah to his grandson is like recreating and reenacting the giving of the Torah where? At Chorev, at Har Sinai. And I think that perhaps this emphasis on the grandfather-grandson relationship is indicated by Ephraim uMenashe. Because if you recall, Yaakov came down to Mitzrayim. He was in Mitzrayim for 17 years until the end of his life. And according to one opinion in Chazal, I don't know if anyone who disagrees, he was very much dedicated to teaching Torah to Ephraim uMenashe.
Well, who's the blessing after?
Correct, and the blessing is Ephraim uMenashe. Maybe when we give a blessing that you should be like Ephraim uMenashe, what we're really saying is that you should be zocha to have a Torah which brings you back to Chorev. That powerful experience of learning with a grandfather. And I'll tell you something, Rabosai. I have seen amongst my students the relationship to a grandparent. I never had it because I had one grandparent out of four when I was born, and I was a Ben Skunim. And my grandmother wasn't so much with it even when I was growing up. You know, she was going through that old age. But I see amongst my students, I'll never forget, a student came to me and he says, Rebbe, I'm on the next plane out of here. This was in Eretz Yisrael. I said, what happened? My grandfather died. And I think to myself, he's on the next plane out to go to his grandfather's Levaya. To me, it was a little bit foreign because I never had a grandfather. But you know, over the years, sort of vicariously through the experience of my students, I began to realize how powerful the relationship could be between a grandson and a grandfather. It should never be underestimated. Yeah. Anyway, Shol Bizochen, again, thank you for everything, to learn Torah together, to Simcha, and maybe we could have a picture.